Nearly a quarter of the people diagnosed in the U.S. with mental illness in the absence of traditional medical services are likely to have encounters with law enforcement, which has meant that an estimated 2 million people with varying degrees of psychological illness are in prison, some ill before their incarceration, others become ill inside prison, in institutions where there are scant resources for treatment. In New York City, most of the mentally ill inmates from Rikers Island are treated at Bellevue Hospital, where psychiatrists treat patients dealing with their sentences, isolation and stigma, and the oppressive, relentless environment of a crowded prison. Dr. Elizabeth Ford is the chief of psychiatry for Correctional Health Services for New York City's health and hospitals. She became a prison psychiatrist after moonlighting at Bellevue Hospital to pay off some student loans and saw that the prison population was grossly underserved when it came to mental health assistance. She's the author of Sometimes Amazing Things Happen, Heartbreak and Hope on the Bellevue Hospital Psychiatric Prison Ward. It's a memoir of her experiences as a correctional psychiatrist working with patients and inmates.
I had been told that all these patients lie and they just try to do everything to get out of jail. But in fact, they were quite honest. They were very compassionate with me, which is also something I didn't expect. And they were very sick, like very sick. And many of them had never had a doctor, period. And of those who have had a doctor or a psychiatrist, many of them had not had good experiences.
And if we enlarge this to include all of the prisons in the United States, this is where we treat the mentally ill in America, and the need is catastrophically infinite.
Yeah, I think catastrophically infinite is probably the appropriate way to describe it. Part of the journey and part of really what I wanted to share with others is that in the midst of all that like endless well of need, there are little pockets of hope. There's pockets of success. I mean, there are little tiny interactions that I would never have thought would make a difference. One sort of very compelling example to me was during Hurricane Sandy. There were 61 patients who joined together, I mean, literally in all sorts of ways to get through that, to work with each other. There were patients who had been fighting the day prior who were helping each other get water, get clean linens, dealing with their stress. And that, I think, maybe was a very pivotal moment for me in terms of seeing the real potential of what can happen in a system like this.
Over 5 or 6 decades, the idea of institutional treatment for the mentally ill has been, you know, denigrated. Mm-hmm. Mass release was the sort of policy of the 70s. The consequence of that is that these people have found their way back into other institutions called prisons. Your book, in a strange way, makes a case for an institutional setting that would work, even though you're not regressive in any way. You're not a throwback.
I'm glad you brought that up, because the idea of what's the best setting for these kinds of patients is extraordinarily complicated, and I don't have the answer. I struggle with that. I'm not advocating for going back to that. I'm certainly not advocating for the incarceration, the mass incarceration of people with serious mental illness. But I think you're very correct that some of the work, some of the successes, some of the ability to form relationships with these patients that I've had have been in institutional settings. And I don't really know how to reconcile that yet.
What would you say is a feature of the punishment system in the criminal justice system that bears most heavily on your work as a psychiatrist?
The policy decisions that have had the most impact, at least on the patients that I treated at Bellevue, really had to do with mandatory sentences. And I had a number of patients, one of whom I talk about in the book, who had been sentenced under the Rockefeller drug laws. When those were repealed and he was able to be resentenced and probably released because he had already been in for a decade, he was too sick to come before the judge to get resentenced. And there was nothing written into the law to allow him to actually get out. Within the system that I work in now, the jail system, you can get arrested while you are in jail or prison for things called infractions. And sometimes those are inconsistently enforced, hard to understand. They can be very different from how you behave out in the community. And so for people with mental illness particularly, it can be hard to know how to behave correctly so that that doesn't happen to you.
And the infractions pile up.
That was my experience when I was at Bellevue, that I treated a number of patients who had accumulated thousands of days of solitary confinement. But there have been some major reforms. They're called box days. they don't accumulate like that anymore. And for the patients I treat, that's an enormous improvement.
Will we ever make a decision as a society how we want to treat the mentally ill?
As a society, and frankly, I'm going to also speak as a psychiatrist, I don't think we understand mental illness. Definitely not in the same way as we understand diabetes or hypertension. And I do worry that if we don't try to understand it in a real nitty-gritty from the patient's perspective, I don't know if we ever will understand it in a way that can really shift public opinion about it.
You had a close-up view of how the institutions you work for actually, in certain instances, make people sick. Yeah. What was that like to experience as a physician?
Well, for me, it was almost catastrophic. I mean, there was a point where I actually had to quit. And also to recognize that a lot of my work is not specifically how do I find the correct medication for this person with schizophrenia, but how do I help this person be safe and not get worse in a system that's chaotic and traumatic. I mean, it's hard, but the rewards are enormous. Sometimes people need guidance and sort of a little faith in terms of where to find those rewards.
Well, your title is Sometimes Amazing Things Happen. What's the characteristic story?
A patient who I describe in various points in the book came into the system, a black man who believed with all of his heart that he was white. And his particular challenge was that he would try to peel off his skin. He was delusional about this belief. You could not convince him otherwise. And he was really hurting himself. So I treated him and we developed this relationship. And by the end, he was taking his medication. He was no longer delusional. He even spoke about his beliefs from years ago and how he hoped that those didn't return. And then eventually, I actually saw him out in the community and he had a baby. He was on the cusp of getting a job and he had a place to live.
So sometimes amazing things happen. It's a set of amazing stories, heartbreak and hope on the Bellevue Hospital Psychiatric Prison Ward, the book by Dr. Elizabeth Ford. She's chief of psychiatry for correctional health services for New York City's health and hospitals. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.